Welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, a weekly news digest covering events in Israel. It's relevant and accurate information you need to know, direct from the Holy Land. You're listening to Front Page Jerusalem.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Front Page Jerusalem, the voice of Israel to the world, brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel in the city of the great King, Jerusalem. I'm Earl Cox.
I'm Ben Kinslow.
And I'm Kevin Howard in Jerusalem.
While much of the world has experienced recent increases in terror attacks, the nation of Israel has dealt with them far longer. For decades now, many Israelis have learned to protect themselves with their own brand of self-defense, known as Krav Maga. But the effectiveness of it has come at the unfortunate cost of real-life need. Yet, its very effectiveness is what has encouraged many coming to Israel to train and learn this interesting self-defense skill set.
Well, that's quite interesting, Earl. Since we find in the Psalms that God is the one who trains hands for war, and being able to defend a life against attack is definitely a way of saving it. Much of the pain and suffering around our world is caused by those who see others who appear weak and easily taken advantage of. The more people who can stand up for their brothers and sisters to protect in any way possible, the better many things can be.
That's true, Ben. And the more attacks can be prevented, the less need there is for serious healing over time. Rebuilding after the trauma and pain of a terror attack is considerably harder than preventing it in the first place. Our guest today has a first-hand perspective of self-defense, and Kevin Howard recently sat down with him in our Jerusalem studios. We'll bring you that up-to-date interview in just a moment. But first, let's hear from the CFI Jerusalem News Desk, where David Milburn has the recent headlines from Israel. David?
Thanks, Earl. The United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees has evacuated 10 of its international senior employees from Gaza to Israel after they were threatened and harassed by the UNRWA's disgruntled local Palestinian staff following the agency's announcement to cut more than 250 jobs. The agency's senior officials were rescued and transferred to Israeli territory via the Eretz crossing, which remained closed throughout the Jewish holidays but was reopened by the Israeli security officials following an official request from UNRWA. The coordinator of government activities in Gaza issued an official statement confirming the incident. A number of foreign UNRWA employees have been evacuated from the Gaza Strip. This is due to the tensions as a result of the financial crisis UNRWA is facing and subsequent concern for the safety of its foreign staff, stressed the statement. The Hamas terrorist organization did not protect the agency staff from the violence directed at them. UNRWA's employees launched a general strike in protests of the agency's decision to fire 100 workers in Gaza. Now, before we return to Earl, here's today's This Page in History.
On October 6, 1965, Los Angeles Dodgers pitcher Sandy Koufax refuses to pitch in the first game of the World Series because it is Yom Kippur. The opening game was on Yom Kippur, and Sandy Koufax, who had won 26 games that season to set a major league record, did not pitch for his team. Koufax was not treated with respect by the local press in St. Paul. He did pitch the second game and lost, but won the fifth and seventh games, both complete game shutouts, as the Dodgers won the World Series against the Minnesota Twins. Yom Kippur is a day of sacrifice, and here's Koufax, who did this reflexively not out of his own great belief, but really more in deference to others. So it was much more a greater sacrifice on his part to do so. For a more religious man, it might have been a no-brainer, but for Koufax, it was simply the right thing to do.
Welcome back, everybody. For many today, the idea of defending themselves or others can be somewhat foreign. But in a world that is increasingly encountering terrorism and violent crimes, sometimes the confidence and understanding of self-defense is enough to help us remain safe. Kevin Howard recently found out more.
Thanks, Earl. I am speaking with Krav Maga instructor Avi Hyde today in the studios. Avi, thank you for joining us on the program.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be here.
Avi, can you start a little bit by telling us your background and how you became a Krav Maga instructor here in Israel?
So I was born in the United States in Texas. So we moved to Israel, made Aliyah as Zionist Jews in 2003. I was 11 years old. When I came here into the school system, I had quite a big problem straight from the get-go with bullying. And, you know, I was the regular redheaded, nerdy glasses, really short, longer hair. Got beat up, went on for months of beating me and pushing me around and throwing me on the ground. And so then my dad taught me how to punch, held up a pillow for me, rehearsed it a couple times. And it was actually one day while I was at school, he was actually kicking one of my friends. One of my friends was on the ground tying his shoelaces, and he kicked him and spat on him. And I called out his name, popped him in the nose, and ran away because I thought he was going to come after me. But he was on the ground. He was laid out. That was ultimately the idea, is that I wanted to learn how to protect myself, and I wanted to learn how to protect others that couldn't protect themselves, just like my friend.
So why is Krav Maga so popular amongst Israeli society?
In Israeli society, we have judo, we have jiu-jitsu, we have boxing, Muay Thai. The difference mainly with Krav Maga is that in essence, there are no rules. In a real fight, when you're needing to defend yourself, it's less of a martial art and more of a reality-based self-defense system. So that's why it would be one of the most popular, is it's somewhat less of a sport, even though you do get a great workout, teaching you to be much better prepared for what encounters you might have in real life.
You know, many of the recent terror attacks across Israel over the last year were knife-based. Does this type of training help people react for that situation?
Ultimately, yes. I wouldn't be teaching it if there wasn't an ability to get out of a knife attack alive. For us, personally, for our system of Krav Maga, ICCS stands for Israeli Contact Combat System. That is, by the way, contact combat is the literal definition of Krav Maga. Krav is combat, Maga is contact. We focus on building up your skill levels to the point where you ultimately can, you know, encounter a knife-based attack and come out alive. The idea is focusing on minimizing the damage. So yeah, so in our system, the idea is, you know, you're training it from the beginning, and around 4 years after training, you get to the point where you test on it, and that would be what I would say, more or less, depending on the person, would be on the point that you could trust yourself to be in an active knife attack and find yourself able to really make it out and neutralize the attacker so they can't hurt other people also.
So with your level of experience, have you done anything in the competitive martial arts field?
Yes. Krav Maga is, there's a lot of biases around it. It's a combination of martial arts. It takes just the most effective ground game, the most effective stand-up game of, by game I mean martial art techniques, takes out all the flashy stuff. So in that aspect, a lot of what I've trained as far as Muay Thai, so like Thai boxing, K1, I've won the 2015 Israeli Championship in K1, several different medals, second place and third place, a number of different times in the Israeli Championship for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and I've done different MMA competitions also.
Avi, among your students then, have you encountered a sense of community amongst the Israeli society?
Absolutely. One of the big draws that that my students have always told me is that that we really do have a sense of community, the family type base. We, you know, when it comes to striking, and we are punching each other in the face on a daily basis, with gloves, of course, you have to lower your ego because, you know, you can never go at 100% power. So this is an important part of what we do. You have to be able to work technical sparring, where you're not trying to hurt the other person, but you are trying to work with them, to outpunch them, to outsmart them. There are a lot of gyms out there that go way too hard, and they hurt each other, and it's much more competitive. And while we do have a competitive spirit, I'm a competitive person, we also want to stay friends. Yeah, and in regards to reflecting Israeli society, we have all facets. So we have men and women, obviously. We have Orthodox Jews wearing black and white when they leave the gym, and they still come and they train. We have Christians, Orthodox Jews, atheist Jews, and everything in between. We have some Arab Christians, and we've even had some Arab Muslims join us also that were interested in defending themselves. Different people for different reasons. It's some really just want to focus on the fitness. Some want to focus on the self-defense aspect. Some even want to compete. None of it is necessarily surprising. It's just different goals.
Can you give us some examples then of some real life applications that the students have used with their training?
One of my students, he's a bit of a bigger guy. He was overseas actually not too long ago. There was an instance where someone started getting verbally offensive towards him, and then got up and even grabbed his shirt. This student was able to analyze the situation, and that's very important to have that awareness, to understand what's going on, apply the correct amount of force. It was enough for him to base down and get a type of bear hug on him to restrain him and then push him away. So, a big part of what I teach is the mentality of, if there's ever a threat, whether a knife threat, gun threat, or anything like that, it's the first thing, it's a trick question, essentially. The first thing, they come up, they point something at you, they gang up on you, and they want your wallet, right? What do? You give them your wallet, right? Because there's no amount of money, there's nothing like that that's worth more than your life. And in general, I also teach my students that there is no middle ground as far as in between full-on fight, neutralize your opponent, and completely defensive, not looking for anything at all. You always have your hands up because you're always in a position where you want to be prepared if they do start throwing punches. But you have your hands up and palms facing out because you're trying to show that you're in a defensive position, you're not looking to fight. There's no getting, puffing your chest up in someone else's face. There's none of that. And that's what ultimately leads to a lot of fighting. A lot of fights, a lot of real life application, it doesn't start from just someone just coming and swinging at you. That happens, but that's definitely on the rarer side. And if you know how to de-escalate a situation before it even becomes physical or violent, then you'll find yourself not having to get involved in those physical altercations. And that's ultimately the goal. We want to stay as peaceful as possible. Violence is the last option we want to have. That's always what I was taught by my instructors. It's always what I was taught by my parents. It's necessary when it's necessary, but you always look for the alternative. You always look to use your words.
Sometimes the best way to ensure peace is to be aware of life's real dangers. Israel has an impressive reputation for the shortness of our defensive wars, but even with that track record, we still need to continue to pray for the peace of Jerusalem and all of Israel. But right now, we need to take a short break so that you can hear about a special outreach project of Christian Friends of Israel that's making a real difference for some very special people in the land of Israel today.
You stand on duty with the wind biting through your uniform. The day is overcast, and winter's chill bites deeper as the day progresses on into evening. You hear rumors of what some in the nations say about you as an IDF soldier. You wonder if anyone outside of Israel ever really cares. The next morning, you hear that you are going to have visitors. A small group of civilians is arriving, bringing fleece jackets, hats, smiles, and support from the nations. As you interact, you cannot help but feel the genuine care and love expressed by these new friends from something called Project David's Shield. With a warm jacket and very cool hat, you sit to listen as these new friends explain the care and concern that so many in the nations have for the tiny nation you protect. You learn that they consider you the modern-day warriors of David's army, defending the people of the land. Your heart is warmed by more than the jacket they provide. It is also warmed by the knowledge that you are not alone. There are many who really care.
Christian Friends of Israel's project, David's Shield. Just one more way we're making a difference in Israel, one life at a time. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to our continuing discussion between Front Page Jerusalem's Calvin Howard and Avi Hyde, looking at the value of Israeli Krav Maga, self-defense, and the change it can have on a person's perspective and confidence during life-threatening situations.
Avi, do you find that your personal beliefs impact you somehow as you operate as a self-defense instructor?
So I'd say for the most part, no, just because the techniques that are used, the principles behind, you're getting choked, It's not going to change that you need to get out of that choke, no matter what your faith is. And it's not even going to change necessarily where we strike the person. I mean, if it's a knife attack, if it's a gun attack, but even if someone's coming at you with fists, you have to treat it as serious as it is. Meaning that, you know, attacking the eyes, attacking the groin, attacking the back of the head, those are all fair game. The likelihood that you'd be able to, you know, actually kill someone with your hands is very low. Most oftentimes it has to be very intentional. That's not what we're looking to do, obviously, is, you know, kill the person we're in front of. We're looking to neutralize them, knock them unconscious, you know, at least knock them down so we can run, get help, something along those lines. But that doesn't take away from the fact that we do have to be aggressive in that moment in order to save our life. I mean, I believe, and I know many people do believe that self-defense is something that Yeshua, Jesus, approved of. What my instructor always says is self-defense is a legal term, not a winning strategy. To make it out of a situation, you have to go offensive. There's no technique that is strictly defensive, no matter how experienced you are. You can't underestimate your opponent. You have to put them down and go get help as soon as possible. So again, as far as the physical application of the techniques that we perform and the principles that I teach, they are not affected by my faith.
Avi, does the physical side of self-defense change your approach in dealing with the spiritual side of self-defense?
Yeah, so David was both a physical and a spiritual warrior. And I strongly believe that they support each other in a way. There are principles in the physical that apply to the spiritual. And I think for that very reason, Paul gave the example of running a race as our faith. And I think the example can be applied in martial arts and self-defense just the same, if not even more. Running is hard, but getting punched in the face over and over is even harder. Staying resilient, and that's how it feels sometimes when we come under spiritual attacks, getting punched and knocked down. Perseverance is huge in the physical and the spiritual, to just keep fighting through. Obviously, in the spiritual, we have our faith, we have our trust in God that whole time, and that gives us that even stronger of a boost. I love the parallels between the spiritual and physical. The combat, the spiritual is even more severe. I love to be prepared for both.
All right, so as an instructor, what's your main advice to someone who's suddenly facing an attack situation?
Well, the first line, trained or not, if you're able to overcome the adrenaline surge and the deer in headlights effect, and you're able to already see an exit, and you're far enough away, depending on the attacking situation, a gang, a terrorist stabbing attack, you see you have the opening, you see you have the opportunity to run, you run. That's easy. A lot of times, you don't have the opportunity to run. You get stabbed from behind. The person is just a couple yards away. You know, I watch, it's sad, but for me, it's homework. I watch the videos, you know, of terrorist attacks because you see really what happens. You'll see people running away from a terrorist running after them with a knife, and they look like they're running in slow motion. Adrenaline surges, lactic acid floods their body, and everything becomes stiff. So that's the tricky thing. If you're close to an attacker, adrenaline was not made for the flight so much. You start running away. You start running away in slow motion, and it's very hard to then turn around and interact. Trained or not trained, is tricky, right? Ultimately, the principles that we teach the IDF here are going to be somewhat similar. You know, we don't have time for years of technique. It's going to be principles, and one of the principles is aggressive, kadima. Kadima in Hebrew means move forward. That means never be on the defensive. So your mentality has to change. In order to defend yourself, you have to attack. And so that is one of the primary principles that I teach all my students. That is, if you don't have the opportunity to run, you have to attack.
During your career, then, have you had any incidents on or off the street that have solidified your commitment to continue teaching Krav Maga?
Well, one instance would be my time teaching children from age 4 to 12 in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. You know, it's wrestling with choke holds and arm locks and shoulder locks, different things like that. And there had been a number of instances where some of those kids had actually been bullied. So I had actually talked with the parents, and you know, we took the same approach that my parents took with me. You know, they talked with the schools. Unfortunately, they don't do very much about bullying here. Ultimately, I was able to, you know, give them encouragement, just the courage to stand their ground and say no. And a lot of times they're able to use their words just to stand their ground when needed, and also wrestle the person down to the ground. But so I felt real encouragement, real affirmation in what I do when being able to see other kids like that and being able to help them. That is always great. We've had some women who've had some traumas in their past, and when they first came to class, it was tough for them to to get bear hugged or something like that. After a number of months, they've been able to gain their security. You know, now they get bear hugged, boom, their arm goes right into your groin, and they have no fear anymore. It really gives them a self-confidence boost. Again, without ego, you know, but having that confidence is already so important. A big part of Krav Maga is using the things around you, you know, using the tools around you. Your fists, your legs, they aren't your only weapons when you need to protect yourself. I got bullied in most of the schools I went to, and I broke my leg, and I was going there with crutches, and I got bullied when I was with crutches. Yeah, I mean, a crutch is a great way to stop a bully. Got them in the groin and then whacked them, you know. That stopped it right there. So that's one option, right? Specifically in our classes, we've had two Marines that are 55 years old. We had an older man that had trained Kung Fu in the past, 63 years old. And they've all been able to work with people of all ages, you know. There's a natural confidence that you get from learning self-defense, right? A lot of the people that come to Krav Maga, they lack confidence. And the people that have a lot of confidence, they come, they get humbled. So either way, they gain a positive confidence just through training. I believe that when training, at least in the classes that I teach, that you understand that there are consequences to violence, even if you weren't the person that started it. But you start to understand how serious violence is. And so I think that acts as a deterrence of you becoming a bully itself. I definitely do believe that, you know, I've been teaching my own adult classes for a little over 2.5 years now. I've taught the children's class before that and different classes in the past. I've been assistant instructors. But with my students, I haven't had that problem because there really is a community. We've had some students that come in and, you know, they were looking to go a lot harder, and they weren't really looking to, you know, build technique together and work with other people. And we definitely have times where we go really hard. But, you know, there's time and a place for that. And, you know, I've never had to tell anyone to leave. People understood that, you know, that there was a certain community there, and the people that enjoyed it really stayed. That positive confidence acts as a deterrence in the first place. When someone's looking, you know, as a potential mugging or a terrorist attack or something, it's not just that they're not going to go after the big guy, you know, the big strong guy. People like that, you know, when they're analyzing who they're going to attack, they're looking. When you have that confidence exudes off of you. That in and of itself acts as a preventative.
Krav Maga instructor Avi Hyde, thank you for being our guest today on Front Page Jerusalem.
Absolutely. I was happy to be here.
Well, thank you, Kevin, for that very informative interview about the specialized technique of self-defense developed in Israel. Well, our time is almost up for this week, and coming up, we'll hear from David Nekrutman, the executive director of CJCUC, with this week's Bible on the Go. But first, another visit to the CFIJ news desk and David Milburn.
Thanks, Ben. The alleged aerial bombardment of a weapons factory in Sudan last week was indeed carried out by Israel and was seen as a test run for a larger strike on Iran's nuclear facilities, according to a report in the London Sunday Times. Citing unnamed Israeli and Western military sources, the British newspaper reported that 8 Israeli fighter jets, 1 refueling plane and 1 electronic warfare plane, and 2 helicopters carrying commando teams had taken part in the long-range mission. Four of the fighters actually carried out the bombing of the factory, while the other four provided cover. The commando teams were kept in reserve in case a pilot was downed, but that scenario was unlikely due to the capabilities of the electronic warfare plane, which apparently succeeded in totally masking the Israeli penetration of Sudan's air defenses. According to the sources, in addition to eliminating a major link in the Iran to Gaza arms smuggling operation, the Sudan air raid had sent a very clear message to Iran of what Israel was capable of. Now, before we return to Earl and Ben, here's David Nekrutman with this week's Bible on the Go.
Growing up in an Orthodox Jewish household and seeing my friends go out on Friday evening in their cars to the movies or on Saturday morning to the baseball games, I often felt jealous that they were able to be free to do what they wanted, and here I am restricted not to go ahead and do some of this Sabbath stuff. I looked at it as a list of do's and don'ts, but it took a person of great stature who impacted my life greatly, Rabbi Dr. Gerald Meister, and he said a very interesting line to me. You have to understand the why of the Sabbath before the how of the Sabbath. For him, the why of the Sabbath is clearly indicated in the Bible, in the Ten Commandments, in fact. It is about God the Creator and God the Redeemer. And we need a 25-hour period where we can go ahead and focus totally on that concept of who is God in this world and what has He done, not only collectively as a nation, but personally as well in our own lives. We are commanded to go ahead and work 6 days and really unleash our creative power. That is what really separates us from the animal kingdom. But creative power needs a rest, a release from external obligations, and to focus on internal relationships with God, family, and the community. Sabbath is not just about a cessation of work, but a powerful force to imitate the holiness of God. It is a time from where we go from a pause of earning our livelihoods to a reflection of yearning for God. It is a day not to pursue mastery, but to celebrate mystery. This is David Nekrutman with Bible on the Go.
Thanks, David. Well, that's our show for today. We hope that you've enjoyed the program, everybody, and thanks for joining us. And please don't forget to support this station, because this station supports Israel.
And before we go, we want to remind you to please pray for the peace of Jerusalem. And let me invite you to join us on this station again right here next week as we bring you all the latest from Israel and the Middle East.
So for now, on behalf of the entire staff of Front Page Jerusalem, I'm Earl Cox, reminding you that because God loves Israel, I do too.
You've been listening to Front Page Jerusalem. For more information, go to frontpagejerusalem.com. Front Page Jerusalem is brought to you by Christian Friends of Israel Jerusalem, making a difference in Israel one life at a time. Front Page Jerusalem is a production of Level E Media Incorporated.